my posture when I pray helps me or hinders me in thinking about God. There are some postures you don't even have to see the person. You just have to see the hands, right? They remind you of God. This is so basic in the spiritual life that I consider this one of the main reasons why so many religious communities have defaulted. They have stupidly removed the reminders of God in their lives. One of your sisters here in the house, when she meets me now, she tells me, as soon as I see her, "Praise be Jesus Christ." So then I answer, "Now and forever, Amen." I think I told some of you, didn't I mention this in class? This is the way I was brought up at home. I never enter the house. Just my mother and I, without saying, "Praise be Jesus Christ," she would answer. When she came in, the same thing.
We the same in Ireland, Father, where we say, "Bless all who dwell in this house when you go into the house."
Blessed?
Bless all who dwell in this house.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Makes sense, doesn't it? If we're going to think about God, which is inside, because we're creatures of sense, we must have reminders of God from outside. And all the senses, sight, hearing, even the taste, and in the liturgy, the smell. Like what?
Incense,
right? To remind us of God. And I would say in the earlier years of formation, there should be more of these reminders than perhaps later on need to be had. Because for one thing, unless they've lived an extraordinarily spiritual life before entering, the young people have been living in a very profane and secular environment, where everything around them breathes, speaks, and even smells of this world. So to introduce them into a new environment, into a spiritual climate, anything I frankly don't think, at least in the United States, we can overdo this. I think in America we tend to underdo it. There's so much secularism around us, we almost apologize for things sacred. One of the ladies yesterday told me, I must have mentioned it in the previous class, that it would be a good idea to make some sign of reverence when we pass the church. And she said, "Father, I can't tell you what it's beginning to do for me. I am now making a sign of the cross when I pass the church." A reminder of God, right? That's number two. Number three, humility of spirit. It may seem obvious, but it's not. Only humble people pray. Proud people don't pray. And consequently, in the measure of our humility, we become more or less prayerful. Let's take each of the four principal forms of prayer known to Catholic doctrine, and how humility subserves and is the indispensable precondition for praying. Adoration. Adoration is that form of prayer by which I acknowledge God's total supremacy and my total dependence. And the critical word in that definition is total. Total supremacy and my total dependence. Clearly, if I'm going to pray adoringly, I will acknowledge God's supremacy and my dependence. Now, the acid test of the prayer of adoration is the willingness to let go of what I like, because God, who is my master, owns it. Consequently, and this I find myself, I may not give the impression, but I am naturally a very irascible person. With a trigger temper. And when angered, can be tempted to cruelty. Have been working on it for years. And I'm still working. But what I find, and I share this with you, I find myself irritated by the most trivial things. The elevator in Manhattan is the slowest elevator, I'm sure, in the Western world. The only way I can keep myself from losing my temper is to pray. Otherwise, I would go around the other side of the building and take the staircase, which I sometimes do. Once I realize that everything in my life, everything, is controlled by God, the firm that made the elevator must have been 1906. His name, Seberg. Seberg didn't make that elevator. God did. You'll pardon me for saying this, but I want to be helpful. You will really think it's silly, but I'm among friends. The only way that I can keep my shoelaces tied is by tying them twice. Do you sometimes have that trouble? In order to keep myself humble, I have not changed my shoelaces. There's another kind that I could tie just once, and they'd stay tied. You know what I'm trying to say? This business of humility touches everything in our lives. Because the only pride that we are really tempted to is not pride with other people. It is pride towards God. Honest. Even as the humility of spirit is not mainly or primarily being humble, walking around with eyes cast down and bumping into persons because I'm so humble. Humility of spirit is mainly recognizing, and there is no substitute for the word, recognizing that I am nothing before God. In the early years of formation, I know of nothing that is more basic than to make sure the young villagers are trained in humility. Now you have to do this subtly and prudently and, of course, kindly. There is only one royal road to humility, and you know it is humiliations. What a mistake so many communities have made and are making. Instead of giving the young villagers the opportunity for practicing humility, they actually cater to their selfish pride. Now, because the modern world is so self-conceited, you have to be careful. And you cannot. I'd say even 20 years ago, you would expect things of young villagers, which today you have to take it easy, so as not to, you might say, break their spirit. All I can say, and as I say it with emphasis, humiliations are necessary. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to go around, you know, brutally humiliating the religious. But whatever you do, make sure that they recognize a humiliation when they see one and profit from it. We can be so cushioned from humiliations in the modern life that unless we cultivate this humility of spirit through humiliations, prayer is a nice thing you read about, but you never develop the spirit of prayer. I have found over the years that people who have been deeply humiliated have sinned over a period of years and offended God profoundly and have come back to Him. The Peters and the Mary Magdalenes, I have found, are among the most prayerful people I've ever met. Do you know what I'm saying? We need it. That's the adoration. That God is master, and He has a right to make a fool of me. And believe me, He does it. He has a right to not do my will. I'm in a hurry. And I lose something. I can't find it. I shouldn't leave New York without taking my keys. I'm in a hurry. Be on time for class. I can't find my keys. Immediately, I turn to God. Lord, keep me humble by keeping me patient. Secondly, the prayer of thanksgiving. If I'm going to practice the prayer of thanksgiving, what must I realize? I must realize that whatever I have is not my own. It is a gift from God. How spontaneously we thank people for what they do for us. Now watch this. Which they don't have to do. The essence of gratitude is appreciation to another person for doing what they did not have to do. Reflection, therefore, on what God has done for me, and not just in a generic sense, but say, in the past day or the past hour, a practice that I would recommend daily is counting my blessings from God today. And I mean counting them. Sometimes I reach 17, on rare occasions 20, 21. We can become so accustomed to what we either have or receive that we may overlook the fact that this is from God. Again, a proud person is not grateful. He or she thinks they've got it coming to him. And one way that I would recommend with the young religious to train them in the practice of humility of spirit is by being grateful, showing their appreciation in little ways, little courtesies. To those with whom they live and those who in some way benefit them during the day. The prayer of expiation, begging for God's mercy. Humility of spirit for most of us is cultivated by the realization of how much and how often we have offended God. Do you know this is the main reason why God allows sin? To keep us humble. Let's not waste our sins. I therefore have over the years recommended to superiors and those in charge of formation to encourage a manifestation of conscience. Now, there are many reasons why people should, as we say, come clean. But one reason, and a very good one, is to cultivate that humility of spirit which is the bedrock of prayer. As you know, most communities do not have obligatory manifestation of conscience. In the Society of Jesus, we do have. We are required by rule to manifest our conscience. But without obligating, certainly encouraging. And I would add in writing. For example, here, this is my third year, I believe, isn't it? Coming to teach. And I cannot tell you how many papers I've received. One page, sometimes a whole sheaf of pages, in which the persons will manifest their conscience. They want to. I'm not telling them you must do it, but it would help me otherwise. I won't know whom I'm dealing with. It's a good thing to put some little autobiography, especially their failings and whatever they've done wrong, in writing. It need not be given to say to you, but he give you a chance to read it. Or they may read it without having you read it for them. They may leave it with you. In any case, humility of spirit through the recollection of one's sinfulness, and this to be done every day. That's why the daily examination of conscience, especially of my sins, is the bread and butter of a life of prayer. And finally, the prayer of petition. Only insofar as I am aware of my needs will I ask God to supply them. There is a phrase that I've quoted perhaps to you already, which is said to be the key to success in any enterprise. It is in six words: find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. In a supernatural life, prayer is mainly filling the need we have for grace by asking for it. But I will never bother, or I will bother filling the need only insofar as I first find it. If I'm to cultivate this humility of spirit in recognizing the need I have for God's grace, I must find myself in need. Reread that passage in the Apocalypse. Remember where Christ, speaking to John, addresses certain bishops, remember, called angels of the different churches. You think yourself rich and well off. You think you have everything, and you are naked and in desperate need. Now, this is where I think, and this may seem far removed from prayer, but it isn't. What we call fraternal correction. The pointing out of people's needs. And I don't just, for example, mean supernatural needs. For example, some people simply lack gentle speech. Some people's language is crude. Some people's vocabulary is undeveloped. Some people's walk is ungainly. Some people's way of eating is disturbing to others around them. Never think you're being picayune by calling judiciously people's attention to their faults, weaknesses, and failings. Even though they're not sinful. Why? Because you help them to cultivate that spirit of humility without which there is no prayer. Number 4. Trust in providence. I might tell you that's why we have a providence. So we might trust in providence. What does this mean? If I am to pray the way I should, I must develop, and it has to be worked at, an awareness of God's providence in everything in my life. I must see God's hand in whatever pleasant or painful thing that enters my life. Why is this so important in the cultivation of prayer? I thought of putting this first, but it ended up fourth. What is providence? Providence, theologically speaking, is God's universal plan, directing all of his creatures to their final end. As such, God's providence is infallible. It is universal. It is eternal from all eternity. The least detail in our lives was in the mind of God. And it is loving. It is God's goodness, which is infinite, in practice. But for our purpose, as relative to prayer, I call God's providence God's talking to us.
This concludes part one of Practical Methods of Mental Prayer. Part two is found on the following tape.